This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel. The new Cray XE30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXE30.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
Seagate acquires Xyratex while Calxeda shuts its doors.
And Japan has 2020 vision for exascale.
Hello and welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for January 7th, 2014. I'm Addison Snell with Intersect 360 Research, joined by my podcast partner, Michael Feldman. Michael, how's it going? Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year. Going great.
Well, Michael, our introduction at the top of the show today is a little bit different, as going forward there are going to be some changes with HPC Wire Soundbite. Starting next week, Nicole Hemsoth, the editor of HPC Wire, will be the regular host, and she'll be bringing you regular interviews with researchers, scientists, end users, and vendors in the HPC community, along with other topics of interest. So we'll encourage our listeners to please remain subscribed to this channel. And Michael, thanks for recording these podcasts with me since we started HPC Wire Soundbite in April 2009.
Hey, it's been a lot of fun. I can't believe it's been nearly 5 years. It seems like we just started this.
Yeah, it does. And we'll look forward to doing more together with Intersect 360 Research in the future. But as far as HPC Wire Soundbite goes, we've got a new year. We had a long winter break. But, you know, the news didn't really take much of a break over Christmas and New Year's. Starting with on December 23rd, we got the news release that Seagate was acquiring Xyratex for $374 million in cash.
Yeah, a lot of the times these things happen at the end of the year. I think we talked about a little bit that during these long breaks, somehow these business decisions get made for the new year. And sure enough, there was this important acquisition. Xyratex has been around for quite a while. Of course, Seagate's, you know, a huge storage company that's been around. And they bought it in cash. And now the whole thing is now underneath Seagate.
Right, the $374 million in cash was as of the final share price before the deal was a 27% bump over the market capitalization of the share price. So it's a cash deal that's gone through. Now Xyratex is heading into its annual sales conference, and it appears that everything for the cluster store line of business is business as usual right now. Seagate said as part of the deal that they would continue to operate the cluster store business, which of course is the portion of interest to HPC,
right,
as an independent business within the company, and that was an important part of the acquisition.
Right, and once again, this does put sort of HPC property under a company that is not HPC focused, and of course people start to worry about that again because the Lusters has been sort of through this mix for a while.
This with Luster before, right? The Luster brand is a hot potato that keeps bouncing around. Luster brand, for those keeping track, is now owned by Seagate.
Yeah, exactly. But it's resilient. I mean, it's gone through, we've seen it go through Sun and Oracle and a number of companies.
Sun wasn't the first one either. It started with cluster file systems.
Right, and that was an HPC company. Then Sun became an HPC company. Then Oracle, that was sort of the downtime for that, and they spun that out. Now Xyratex, and of course Wham Cloud on the other side, Intel owns that part now. But there's a resilience to Luster. There's a lot more momentum behind it than it was during just a few years ago, and it's certainly going to survive as the business unit for the time being. But beyond that, we're not quite sure what will become of that unit.
Well, I think the cluster store business is a valuable asset, and it's going to continue in one form or another. The question for Seagate is, does it want to compete with its own OEM partner? partners that it provides disk to who might have their own high-performance computing products. Now, that may be as sustainable if Cluster Store really is a separate line of business, or it could get sold, or it could get spun off independently, but I don't think anything negative happens with the Cluster Store line of business. That should really remain as a growth area that that Seagate wants to see maintained.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's just, depending upon circumstances, what they'll do with it, but yeah, it's a valuable asset. There's a lot of IP. There's a lot of expertise in that company. Those people will definitely keep it going. So it just it'll be interesting to see in the next year what happens with this. But for now, we've got Lustre under Seagate.
Need scalability across the performance spectrum? The Cray XC30 supercomputer family delivers on Cray's commitment to an adaptive supercomputing architecture that provides both extreme scalability and sustained performance, leveraging a robust processor roadmap, high-performance interconnect, and flexible network topology. Users can configure the exact machine to meet their specific requirements today and also remain confident that they can upgrade and enhance their system to address the most challenging multi-petaflop application demands of the future. To learn more about Intel Xeon processor-enabled Cray supercomputers, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
So that's one story that we saw hit over the Christmas break. And then right on the heels of that, we got maybe less fortunate news that we saw that Calxeda was shutting its doors.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise, I think, to a number of people. I mean, Calxeda had sort of been the flagship company pushing the ARM in server company. And I think it sounds like they just ran out of runway there. They had some funding. I think they collected $100 million or so in funding. But it sounds like they ran out of money for what they wanted to do next. So they had to shut down. At least for the time being, they had to lay off the employees. Now, they're still talking about restructuring, and that may yet happen.
Yeah, there are a lot of important assets there still. I think the key here is, as you point out, that as far as high performance computing goes, there was a lot of waiting and testing as we wait to get towards 64-bit. And there's a lot of assets there that were just waiting for fruition, or more importantly, waiting for revenue. And then there's a question of how do we bridge that and get the assets over there. This has been well covered by Tiffany Trader on the HPC Wire side, and Tim Prickett Morgan wrote it up in Enterprise Tech, talking about how those assets could still move forward into the HPC market.
Yeah, especially the Fabric IP there is probably quite valuable. Somebody might pick it up, an ARM licensee, or even a server licensee might find a way to use it. But for now, it just seems like they jumped in maybe a little bit too early into the ARM server business, and 64-bit was just a little too far away. Now, the investors really didn't say why they shut it down. I think some of it, could have been that Intel sort of jumped into this business with both feet for a while, and maybe that made them a little skittish. And
sure,
other companies, Marvell is coming up, and even companies like Samsung are making noise, and other companies. Maybe they just felt it was going to be a little bit touchy to keep it going the way they were.
Well, and we've shown through our research that, of course, processor architectures are the big area of evaluation right now. What's this going to look like as we do move forward to exascale and greater levels of scalability? What's the role going to be of x86 versus accelerated platforms versus ARM? These are all in the discussion, but it takes a long time to do the evaluation, and you have to be very patient on the venture capital side to see this play out.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I think that's basically what happened. I think their patience ran out with this. They got a little skittish. But like we said, I think this technology will surface somewhere, just not sure how.
Well, and now we mentioned exascale there. Let's get to the third big story. We've been theorizing about exascale now for a couple of years, and going back to the conversation at ISC, I had my Crossfire panel. We were talking about, when is exascale going to come out? What year? What country? And here now we have the first stake in the ground with a formal plan that Japan has announced that Riken will host an exascale computer starting in the year 2020. So there we've got the first stake in the ground is someone's formalizing a plan saying 2020 is the year and here's where we're going to put it.
Right, that's significant. I mean, especially since considering it's basically less than seven years away to get that done, so which isn't all that long. But you know, Japan, they're very methodical. They have these projects. I think they did basically the same type of sort of strategy with their petascale systems. They got that. I think they made like a 6 or 7 year plan to get that going. So not a big surprise, but it's at least a little bit earlier than anybody in the U.S. is looking at right now, at least. There's no contract that's looking at 2020. There's no contract at all. And
even 2022, I think, is even viewed as optimistic by a lot of people in the U.S. right now.
Yeah, that's right. 2022, people are kicking that around. But again, that's not even a plan yet. It's just a guess now. But so, yeah, Japan might hopscotch all of them.
Well, as you pointed out, Japan has a history of making and meeting these 5-year plans. They did it with the K computer, or rather 6-7 year plans. The K computer came in, surprised people when it was first announced ahead of schedule,
right.
And that was right after a fairly significant tsunami and earthquake and nuclear problems going on in Japan. And amidst all that, the K computer was delivered ahead of schedule. So Japan has a history of delivering this.
Right. All that, they lost two of their contractors on that, and they had Fujitsu build became the main and only contractor. Now, they didn't announce who was the main contractor for this. They've just announced the date, basically, at this point. I'm sure in subsequent months and years we'll hear about who gets awarded the system contracts for these.
Correct. I think the short money would be on Fujitsu again, although they might try to spread it out. Do you want to get Hitachi involved? Do you want to get NEC involved?
Right.
You know, but I would certainly look at Fujitsu as the prime right now.
Yeah, so would I. They're the most versatile system builder now for this type of thing, so I would guess so too. But yeah,
they also haven't announced any particulars, obviously, about the technology. It would be interesting to see does Spark continue as the primary processor going forward. That I would hedge my bets on. I would start looking toward maybe another processor for exascale in 2020. We might have seen the next iteration of K, which is bridging the gap to exascale, might be the end of the road for Spark there.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, the Japanese are going to be very cognizant of the power draw here. They're basically famous for getting very power efficient computers. They're not about to build, I don't think, a 50 megawatt exascale system just to have it out there in 2020. So they want to get the right processor and other technologies in there to fit in a tight power envelope, I'm sure.
Now, I might have cut you off before. I think you were about to say we haven't heard from the Chinese in all this. This is not a guarantee that this will be the first exascale system.
Right. I mean, the Chinese have certainly made noises about getting a system out sometime around the end of the decade as well. They don't have an announced project, I think, at this point, but they're certainly serious contenders to get something out. Of course, they surprised everybody recently with the Tianhe 2 system. Now they're at the top of the top 500 list. They could easily put something into play, I think, around that same time frame.
Yeah, so I don't think so. I bet that Japan is still first with this one, or if China comes up with one, it might be a trick system that's maybe not quite as efficient. I'm going to stick by my prediction from earlier this year that Japan, or now we know it'll be Riken, will be the first exascale system in 2020, and there might be a significant lag before we see the U.S. up there.
It might be, but I still think, even though it sort of seems like a dark horse now, I think the U.S. still has a chance. I think it could be, I don't know who the buyer would be here, but I think a system could be put together in a relatively short period of time if the technology meshes in the latter part of the decade. But again, that would be a quick turnaround at this point because a lot of the groundwork is sort of lagging.
Well, it'll be fun to watch. We'll wrap it up here for HPC Wire Soundbite, but we will continue to watch these stories as analysts with Intersect 360 Research and HPC Wire and its other sister publications at Tabor Communications will continue to track this space. We just won't do it on this podcast.
Sounds good, Addison. Great doing this podcast with you. I had a lot of fun.
It's been a lot of fun, Michael. Thank you very much for being a great podcast partner. For HPC Wire Soundbite, that's Michael Feldman. I'm Addison Snell. Thanks very much to our listeners.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel, the new Cray XC30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownxc30.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.